You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for the Book of Boba Fett on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Chapter 3, The Streets of Mos Espa. Aaron, what'd you think of the third episode?
The streets of Mos Espa are a lot goofier than the tribes of Tatooine, let me tell you.
Goofier? Okay.
The streets of Mos Espa are akin to the streets of Gotham City in that one Batman where everything was in neon colors and Robin was a punk and he stole the Batmobile and it's just kind of a mess.
And everybody had nipples.
Cod pieces and rubber nipples. That's the vibe I'm getting from Mos Espa. It's not a good vibe. If I was Jabba, if I was Boba, I would take off with the Hutts. This is good.
Yeah.
This is your muscle. Look at your muscle, dog. Your family's going to die.
Yeah, I don't know if the New Mutants can get the job done. There's certainly no original X-Men.
Yeah. I'm like, okay. Gamorreans, yeah, that's cool. Danny Trejo, that's looking up Rancor. Oh, yeah, I'm digging this. Wait. This is your rival motorcycle gang, and they're riding
Space Vespas?
Space Segway? Yeah. Uh-huh. I was trying not to bite one of our emailers, but yeah, that's rough.
Well, yeah, I'll bite him because I didn't read the email. So, yeah, man, I hated that action scene. This week's obligatory action scene was much worse than last week's obligatory action scene.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, I don't know what you do. I guess you write the thing and you're shooting it and it's just not working and the speed never seems like it's going more than 15 miles an hour and you're looking at the dailies and what do? Just cancel it?
Yeah. Yeah. You go back to the drawing board.
I feel like you're Disney. Just film something because it just didn't work, man. Like even pod racing is as much shit as it gets in episode one. At least it was genuinely exciting. Like there was a real sense of speed.
There was,
But I feel like an old lady in a walker could have just grabbed, knockoff Bib Fortuna's collar and just jerked him out of at any time during this race. Boba's got a jetpack, for God's sake. He could just landed in the car seat next to this guy. And it would have been a more amazing action scene, to be honest.
And he practically does at the end, right? He just
That's what I'm
in.
Saying.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty sad. And I don't know. I like this episode overall. I think there are some very cool things in here, some good things. It's just, boy, that action scene really turned me off.
There was a lot to like in this episode. Yeah. But there also, it felt like, everything involving the cyborg gang was just...
I'm calling them the vapor thieves.
The vapor thieves.
Stealing
the economics. The economics of Tatooine was bizarre. Like Boba Fett's like, that much for water. Like, look, guys, Favre, I don't know if you know this, but the reason water is so cheap in Earth is because the planet's covered with 2/3 of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you can't get fucking away from water on this planet. Tatooine, the desert planet that has the two suns, not so much water.
There used to be.
Still needed to live. Not so much water. It might be fucking expensive, especially in times of unrest, like when you come and you murder the legitimate black market overlord and there's a power vacuum that fills it. Like, cause and effect, Master Fett, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I feel like there is a lot of cause and effect going on here with the story they're telling, but I want to get to that later. I like the flashback scenes a lot. Mm-hmm. I think like he's paying a price for the things he's doing there, and he might not be making all the right calls, and I think that's interesting, especially with how it interfaces with the new version of Boba Fett that you see, in the current timeline. Yeah. And then I really liked the Wookiee fight and the Rancor scenes. I think those things were really good.
Wookiee fight was okay.
I just like to see Wookiees fight. I rarely get to see Wookiees fight, and when they do, it's usually with their bowcaster or something. And,
true, like just to see one.
But
just
to see
wrecking.
One take a bite of a Gamorrean, yeah, hell yeah,
yeah. Got vibro knuckles just swinging left, right, and center.
Right.
It was a little bit let down because you still have the Power Rangers, coming in to do it. The teenagers with attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
That Vaporface recruited. That was the best of the action scenes, but oh my god, it didn't have much competition.
Yeah. All right. I don't know how much more I want to say up front about this. I feel like we should just get into the recap.
Let's do it.
But first, let's take a break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, let's get into the recap. Boba gets the lay of the land of Mos Espa after Jabba's death, and then one of his vassals comes to see him with a complaint and also a lucrative solution. We're talking about the vapor thieves here. He says, the vapor thieves are stealing all my water. They're making stuff hard for me. If you kill them or take them out or deal with them, whatever, I'll double my tribute to you.
Have they retconned the term moisture farmer?
I don't know. I always thought it was a moisture farmer, but he calls him vapor.
Always was. No. Don't fucking Berenstain Bears me. This has always been a moisture 100%. Farming situation. And now Steven Root comes along and he flubs the line and we're just going to be stuck with vapor farming from here on out.
I don't think he flubbed the line. I think it was probably written that way. But yeah, why? Why?
I don't know.
Walking Dead situation where everybody calls it something different?
Dude, for as much shit as I get for like quote unquote mispronouncing things, and I do. The damn franchise worth $27 billion can't decide if a main character is Jabba or Jabba. Can't even in this episode in 2022. So I don't know. Moisture vapor. It's always going to be moisture farming to me, but.
Everybody's got a different accent. Boba's got a different accent than this Twi'lek. Twi'lek? I don't know.
Twi'lek, Twi'lek, who knows? You say Jabba, I say Jabba.
You say spider droid, I say speeder droid?
Monk of Angtis. That's it. Yeah. The fucking spider monks. I wonder. Yeah. I talked about them in the first episode. I wonder if they'll figure into the plot. Do you know about these guys?
Not much. No.
These are some, I think there's two different conflicting lores about them. One is that they were monks that took their asceticism to such an extent that they removed their brains and put them in these jars and then put the, so there's literally, ambulatory brains. Okay. And one was, I think that this, the Jabba's palace used to be like, a sanctuary, a temple to these monks. And they wouldn't give it to Jabba, so as punishment, his way to mock them for being so lofty and stuck in their thoughts, he removed their brains and put them in his jars and kind of made them living decorations around his palace. And then they're good, because that's all Star Wars legends at this point. So Favreau might paint with a different type of brush. I'm curious to see, because this is the first I've seen him in the new stuff.
Uh huh.
Spider monks.
Yeah. Still a cooler.
Creepy human brains sloshing around in red fluid filled bowls with spider mechanical spider legs. It's fucking creepy, man.
Yeah, it's, you know, it wouldn't be as creepy if the bowl didn't like dangle off the front. I don't like it
because it looks like a fucking Black Widow spider. Like our monkey brains are programmed to recoil in horror from those things, so
it's terrifying.
And as we should, they're poisonous. I do think that like this is the YA of Boba Fett, but like it kind of makes Boba look like an idiot that, you know, 8D8 had to draw a laser hologram chessboard for him to understand that the Hutts were behind the mayor's attack, you know?
Sure.
Wait 5 minutes till the Wookiee shows up, you'll be sure. But there's also, I was excited to see like maybe the story of Boba Fett taking that Bib Fortuna, but they're painting Bib as a weak leader, no muscle, just he maintained control by essentially paying different syndicates and the mayor off. So it's like, I don't think that's going to be an exciting fight, but I still kind of want to see him. You can't tease a major trilogy character and then not show me his gross Twi'lek bloated tumor face.
we'll see what he looks like. They might retcon that too, who knows.
Bring back the ugly Twi'leks. I'm tired of the fucking hot supermodel Twi'leks. I need to see some average Joe Twi'leks.
Okay, we're gonna pronounce it different in the same sentence now.
Yeah. Perfect. Hell yeah. All right. Yeah, if the mouse can't get it right, I'm under no compulsion.
It's true. It does feel like they're sending Bobo on a side quest here a little bit, but I don't know. It kind of leads back into the main quest. So,
are you excited to see Steven Root in the Star Wars galaxy playing just like a real shitter?
It's not what I would choose for him, but you know, I feel like his work, his time is better spent working on season three of Barry, perhaps. Stuff like that.
He's great.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. Ever since Office Space, I've loved this dude.
Yeah, he's great at like being a character that says he's competent, but he's really just completely lost in the high weeds. He's really great at being like the hammer judge from Justified, where I can see him as like the mayor of like Mos Eisley.
Uh-huh.
And he's actually good at it, but he's also funny in Steven Root. But yeah, watermonger, we'll see.
Sure. All right, Boba roams the streets of Mos Espa until he finds the stolen water, and the Vapor Thieves have it. They make the case that they had no choice but to steal it because there is no work, so Boba decides, I'm going to put you to work for me. And Steven Root, the Vapor Broker, wants 1,300 credits for his stolen water. Boba talks him down to 500 and tells him to cut his prices.
I still think it's funny that, like, you know, like 1,300 credits for water on a desert planet where the only source of water is black melon and pulling out of the air. That seems excessive. Like, if it was sand, that's one thing. I could see charging an arm and land. But water? That's, come on, man.
Yeah, I feel you. It's I just have no perspective on it, right? 1,300 credits could be $60 billion.
Right.
In today's that's money, 1,300 credits could be, you know, a penny and a nickel. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he talks about a 500, I have no perspective on, like, what is this going to do to Steven Root's operation? Is this going to crumble his vapor empire, which we haven't seen yet or what, but
yeah, Bob, I'm still figuring all this out, all this economic stuff, macroeconomic stuff at my age, but I'm pretty sure price controls aren't the answer.
No. Okay. Well, yeah. They're going to try them in Mos Espa. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes, Boba.
All right. Then we go to Boba healing in his back to pod. And then we flashback again to Kamino. Again to Kamino. Do we need to see this flashback 15 times? Is this the only footage they had in flashback form? And we're like, oh, God, we got to run this. We got so many flashbacks to do. Let's run this, I guess, 14 times an episode.
I think it's amazing that Boba's more traumatized by that one time his dad went out for a pack of smokes than he was, but then honestly seeing him beheaded, because we've only seen that flashback once. This dad, don't leave scene has been really at the front of his mind. Traumatic.
Well, he left him with like, what, hundreds of thousands of himself. I feel like there might be some
true
hidden trauma there. Don't Lots leave me alone with my thoughts or something. I don't know.
I'm the youngest of 1.5 million brothers. My God, Dad, what have you done?
No shit.
There's a river of shit running downhill to you, young man. Star Wars nostalgia, I love the belching frog. It's just like almost like a scene for scene remake from the original. Even when I was a kid, I loved the belching frog. I loved the belching frog as a grown man.
Yeah, this was one of the things when they did the special editions that they added a lot of stuff.
This Muppet was OG.
No, it is, but the. When they went back and did the special editions, they added a lot of things like this, right? Like George Lucas said, you know what? I love that fucking frog. Let's get like 19 frogs in every other scene.
And they're all belching in chorus.
Or they're all Jawas are swinging from them, like that.
And then Boba Fett starts nodding his head because he's into the beat. No, they went away. There's some irrational Star Wars exuberance in the 90s.
I just feel like a little bit goes a long way here.
That's the thing, like as a punctuation, it's great.
Yeah,
like it's, you know, like an but like if you get a sentence with six exclamation points on it, you're like, oh my God, calm down.
And it works well here because it is just a little bit
nice callback.
A flashback to him as a Tusken again. I did read some emails. I've read an email or two. I don't know what to call these fuckers.
There's a conversation to be had, turns out.
It turns out there is. I'm going to call them Tuskens until we get to that, because we established it last episode, and then we'll have the discussion. Flashback to Boba as a Tusken, and he rides a Bantha into town to talk to the Pike Syndicate, which are the ones from the train last episode. He finds out the speeder bike gang, Nikto Sand Riders, has already collected protection money from them, and they don't want to double pay, so... he needs to go out and resolve the situation. He says he will. And then he goes back to the Tusken camp and finds it burned to the ground and the Tuskens murdered.
Yeah, that's the one thing when you said that the Boba's paying a price. Like, it seems like everyone else around him is paying the price for his actions. You know, it's like everything seems so badass last episode. And then we see the reprisal and he wasn't ready for it. You know, he didn't get his newly adopted people ready for it, and feels like a real asshole about it, obviously.
Yeah, I think what they're doing with these flashbacks is telling us a tale of unending retribution. Violence begetting violence, and what they're doing with the current timeline is saying Boba has realized that, and he's trying to change that, right? Because he doesn't want to kill people. He doesn't want to torture. He doesn't want to do any of that stuff. So I don't know.
I did Nikto might sound familiar because that's the official name of these kind of like leathery skinned forehead and chin horn people that worked a lot of Jabba skiffs back in Return of the Jedi. I think in between that and episode six, Return of the Jedi, and now they've come up with a whole name and species and all that. So I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah. It feels like they're just getting Boba to do their dirty work in this scene. Like, hey, we think we can probably control you, but these other guys are giving us a tough time. Why don't you go fight them?
Yeah.
But we'll see. So Boba's in the back to tank. He's attacked by the Dark Wookiee, and he's being crushed to death until the new mutants, the Vapor Thieves, come to his aid. And the Gamorreans get in the fight, and eventually the Wookiee is dropped into the Rancor pit by Finnick.
I like the image of this Wookiee just ripping him out of his back to tank. Like, he's in the middle of his reverie of revenge, and he's just immediately taking it to Boba. And I know, so like, I keep on noticing physical features of Mr. Morrison.
Oh God, what now?
This scene, you can't. tell me what I noticed, Jim. You had to have.
His exceptional shape for a man of his age.
That's true. He has fucking put some work on his obliques and his, like, you know, hasn't skipped leg day. The man at 60 is a fucking mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking the toes of Tamura.
Oh, no. What?
No, they're not funny.
Don't go
they're
after his toes.
He splays them in such a way that, like, his big toe makes, like, a greater than 90 degree angle to his foot. This man's in agony with this Wookiee grabbing him. It's like, I've never seen toes take that shape. It's like he's trying to cast a spell.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah, they're curling up, right? Like a Wicked Witch of the West sort of thing.
Something. That big toe. I thought, there's a scene from the new season of Righteous Gemstones where John Goodman does something jolly with a gentleman's thumbs. And the prosthetic effect of these broken thumbs is almost exactly the same as Tamura Morrison's natural reflex of his big toe. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Amazing.
What next week? What are you going to go after on Tamura Morrison?
I don't know. There might be some lobe possibilities.
All right.
You know, I don't know. I'm running out of things to say because he's already got enough on me that he'll kick my ass. And honestly, I think he's got a lot good going on. But
he definitely does. Definitely more than I do. Can I just say? It's not exactly
At 45, if I got in a back to tank right now and slept it until I was 62, I still wouldn't look as good as him.
Oh,
there, I said it.
I don't think it's really a display of strength to roll up to the fight where the new mutants and the Gamorreans and Finnick have finally defeated your enemy in a bathrobe. I just don't think it's as impressive as he wants it to look.
Well, you know, you essentially passed out on the toilet and someone just started rocking your world in that state. There's only one place to go and it's up, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Thankfully he wears those tight boxer briefs in the tank. Otherwise we'd get a display. Who knows what Tamura Morrison body feature we'd be talking about.
How many fuckers are going to stand on this 3x3 trapdoor by the end of the season?
All of them. Every single one.
It's one thing if, like, okay, you're having an audience with Jabba and he calls you and you, like, have to stand on the spot because that's what he wants. It's his rules.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows he's got his finger on the button and you better be fucking polite. You can't just maneuver people into the, I don't know. It felt a little Austin Powers to me.
Yeah, for sure. So Boba wants to respond to this attack by sending a message. Finnick wants to wait. The Hutt show up with a gift of a Rancor and also tell him that the mayor has promised this territory to another party and they're leaving and they recommend he do the same. And then Boba releases Kersantan? I don't know. Dark Wookiee.
Kersantan.
Yeah. And Finnick says, I'll arrange a meeting with the mayor.
Kersantan sounds like a Northern European envisioning of Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah, anything
once a night, Krasantan comes down the chimneys with his Wookiee climbing claws and gives presents to all the good little boys and girls.
Yep, takes a bite of one family member, leaves gifts for the others.
I tell you what, I did get a big thrill at Danny Trejo popping on up to Jabba's palace with a Rancor in tow. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, they don't make a big deal of it until, you know, the next scene, but you see him in the background. You're like, is that? No. And then you realize who's directing these episodes and you're like, of course Danny Trejo is going to be in this. Yeah.
And Danny Trejo would kill to be in it. He's cool.
Do you know how old Danny Trejo is?
He's got to be like 80, right?
77 years old.
Because I remember when he was doing the Machete stuff, like, he was grandpa age, and many moons 10 years have happened since then, yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane. Wild. And they play him against type, because he's like, that's what's cool about, I like this playful use of the Star Wars lore, where it's like, you know, this throwaway scene in Return of the Jedi, where the Rancor, the big fat, greasy Rancor guy is just sobbing like a little boy over his pet being killed, and it's kind of like, aww. This is vicious beast and somebody loved him. To like, no, actually, Rancors are very emotionally intelligent creatures and they need a degree of sensitivity and emotional wear. And Danny Trejo is this guy. Is this big, like, oh, who's a good Rancor? I loved it. It's it's really, really funny.
Yeah, did you want to say anything about the hut scene before we get to the Rancor scene?
What can run a hut off of a planet? Like, what greater, what bigger fish is there?
Bib fish tuna.
Bib fish tuna? I don't think so.
Big Fortuna.
Are they going to get the Moff Fring involved in here? Because I'm like, what's bigger than the huts in the fringes of space?
Yeah, it feels like the mayor did something to consolidate his power.
But this is all. But this is all. Interesting. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the Rancor scene. Boba gets a Rancor tutorial from Danny Trejo, and he wants to learn how to ride it. And Trejo begins the process by allowing the Rancor to bond to Boba Fett by being the first human that it sees. And then the droid, AT-8, reports that the mayor is unavailable for the next 20 days. Boba tells Finnick, let's suit up.
Gonna crash this party. Which is a Dathomir, y'all. I was talking about these Dark Force witch Rancor riding people just as a throw off comment in the pilot episode. Your favorite YouTuber had to look this shit up on Wikipedia. I was so happy to hear that name check, because number one, it makes me look like a boss, but number two, this is the weird kind of shit that I think that Star Wars desperately needs, like an enema to flush out the creative blockage that this franchise has been suffering from. Like, we need to get out there and tell some of these weirder stories. It can involve the Force. It just can't involve Jedi, soldiers, smugglers, or bounty hunters. Force druids riding Rancors? Yes. Yeah, we could do that.
Can we have the witches wearing Mandalorian battle armor? Because that's the only way I want to green light a show for Star Wars universe now.
Witches and Beskar? I don't know. Does it mix?
I don't know. I mean, you can ride a Rancor in Beskar armor, I'm pretty sure.
I think the Rancor can have
bits of
like every, like, well, how cool to be to have a Rancor with knuckles, and every knuckle is enshrouded in the chest piece of a Mandalorian warrior.
Right.
Like, that's a Rancor, and it's mastered. It's been through some fucking shit.
You can hang a helmet off of one of those nose rings for sure.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Just, or oh man, imagine like if like he was wearing like a hauberk or something that's made out of pant, like all the different chest pieces, the Mandalorians, and they're like scale armor, like hanging off of him, and they're like, you know, got Durasteel cables braided in the, but no, the witches cannot be wearing Mandalorian armor. I'm putting a firm no on that.
Okay, fine.
I'll never get greenlit now. I'm too uncompromising in my creative vision.
Yep. I don't know. I like the scene a lot. The Rancor whisperer Danny Trejo is pretty cool, like you said. I do hope we get to see Boba ride it. I'm pretty sure we will.
Have to. There'll be a riot if they introduce the concept of not just any Rancor. This is a thoroughbred racehorse of a Rancor.
Yeah.
This is like of a Rancor connoisseur, Danny Trejo. He's like, saw this Rancor and is like, this is the one. This is my fucking life's work, my magnum opus. Boba Fett is going to ride. If he doesn't ride this guy into battle by the end of the season, I don't know why I've got Disney Plus.
Especially because, like, one of my favorite scenes in this entire episode was just Boba riding a Bantha. Like, I thought that looked so cool. But to see it and see him on a Rancor would be times 10. So,
yeah,
let's do that.
Yeah.
All right. Then Boba and Finnick visit. And they take the Vapor Bikers with them. They visit the mayor. That'll be important. The mayor's assistant locks the door, and when they open it, the mayor's gone. The assistant takes off in a speeder, and the vapor bikers chase. I'm going to use that word as loosely as possible. Chase him through Mos Espa.
They trot after him.
Yes. And they catch up to him and find out the mayor has gone to be with the Pikes.
This speeder chase, man.
It's terrible.
And it just was like, I don't understand. It's like these guys know so much about Star Wars lore, clearly, and they love it. And then they give us this shiny, pristine biker gang on Vespas that doesn't look cool at all. It's not cool.
These look like terrible.
Yeah. Like where
these look like riding your grandma's 1950 vacuum cleaner. Like
out of the box. Like they're uh-huh. like yeah, this yeah. if you
they're too
drove
clean, for sure.
They will no longer look this clean again. They drove it once through the streets of Mos Espa, but they're never going to be buffed to this have you not seen any shit in Tatooine before on a Star Wars movie? They're never pristine and gleaming and shiny.
I get what they're trying to do. This is another like Lucas loves hot rods, and let's put this into Star Wars. These guys are buffing their bikes all the time because they're a biker gang. I get that, but it just doesn't mesh with everything else around it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, souped up 50s, you know, turbocharger, whatevers and choppers are cool. Mm-hmm. Like American Graffiti wasn't about a Vespa gang, man.
Yeah. No, I agree. The design is bad. And yes, the speed of this chase, the feeling of speed, like I'm not even complaining with like, oh, they're going slow, so it's boring. It's just it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like a speeder should be going this slow or any of these bikes.
And you don't need
to
impressive.
The point where every time they like ramp up something, I'm like, is that moped going to make it up that hill? That ramp is too steep for this thing. It doesn't have enough horsepower.
Yeah, man. It's like it's the stunts in Hot Rod, the movie. I you don't have to have impressive vehicles to do a good chase scene. Look at the Firstborn Identity.
Uh-huh.
Like he's riding some Eastern European Econo shitbox and all the cops are in like two cylinder, I don't know, Playmobil cars. But it's fucking badass because they are just wringing the nuts off these vehicles and sliding sideways and going through traffic. And the sense of speed.
Yes, the sense of speed.
Amazing. This is just like, you know, I don't know. It's weird. It just didn't feel like they had the techniques and the effects. But I keep coming back to like, this is just conceptually a failure because like as soon as those guys rolled into town on their bikes, you just wanted to laugh. It was just dumb.
It is.
So like
Conceptually.
Then you try to make them in a pulse pounding chase and it just there's no wheels to fall off because they're hovercraft. But still.
And this is. They need to be careful, I think. I don't know what. I'm a weird Star Wars fan. I'm a weird Disney fan. I'm a weird action viewer. I like my action to be actiony, and this was not actiony. And I feel like every time Disney goes for something like this and half-asses it and ends up with like a rushed, low-budget version of what I expect to see from a Star Wars movie, they end up eroding my confidence in their ability to do this in the future. And they need to be careful with how many times they put a half-assed CGI something on the screen.
Yeah.
Because
unless they literally just want moms and dads watching with their kids.
Yeah. Even then, man, like kids are going to go back to this 20 years from now when they're 30 and go, man, I remember loving that thing. Let me go back. And if it doesn't hold up, they're going to be less fan than they were before.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't know. I feel like this motorcycle gang or whatever, the scooter gang is uniquely bad because I have seen firsthand like kids, like I grew up, I was a man when the prequels came out and I thought, you know, I didn't think they were terrible, but I also didn't think they're nearly as good as the original trilogy. Well, these kids have grown up and they're like, no, actually, old man, you're fucking wrong. These things are gold. Your old trilogy's busted. But I go back and look and I'm like, well, you know, the Gungans are just like, okay, Jar Jar is kind of a fool, but the Gungans weren't. The Gungans were a mighty people with like weapons that were kind of cool. And they had the like, you know, Dinotopia force shield aesthetic with the battle droids are undeniably cool.
Boss Nass is stupid.
Boss Nass. Yeah. Is he?
Yeah. His big slobbering Shake movie.
Well, so is Jabba the Hutt. Jabba's cool. I'm just saying that, like, well, I can't Jabba think of anything in the prequels other than maybe the Death Stick merchant that's as cringy as this thing. And I don't know. I'm with you. I can't imagine a 30-year-old coming back to this and be like, actually, yeah, these bikers are cool. But who knows? Irony can reclaim anything. Like, there might be, you see some cool people dressing up like these dudes for Halloween, ironically, and then suddenly everyone's got good, who knows?
Yeah, and suddenly everyone misremembers how cool it was in the first place because they don't go back to actually check. I don't know, man. I just think, like, we have the technology to make this stuff actually look really good, to actually make it look perfect, indistinguishable from reality. And Disney has the money to do it. And Star Wars is the franchise to do it in.
But this, and like, they're half-assing it. Also, someone just pay attention to the coherency of your world. These kids are too poor to buy water.
Uh-huh.
And they have these gleaming palaces of Vespas that they're riding around.
Yeah,
and
they spend all their money on parts.
And they spend all their money upgrading their, but it all looks new and shiny, and they live in Tatooine. Tatooine is not the rich kids with lots of money neighborhood. This should all look cobbled together, but still cool. And they should look tough and rough around the edges, not like, you know, they were cast out of a WB teen drama.
No, I mean, Anakin's speeder looks fucking cool. Perfect. Pod racer? Yeah, that looks awesome.
Bright primary colors, but it looks like something that someone scavenged from a junk pile.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I don't know. I pretty much hated everything about this chase.
Agreed. And it's just all the dumb shit. Like, and you can tell that, like, when they're in the writers, oh, man, it's going to be fun because we're going to do all the tropey shit. We're going to drive through a fruit basket stand. We're going to drive through a water tower. Tanks. We're going to, you know, make a rickshaw droid do it. But it all comes across as hack because it's set on this just shitty, shitty base.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, well, one more scene here. A whole bunch of pikes get off a ship as Boba's gang watches, and they report back to Boba, and Fennec says, they're going to war. Boba says, we're about to as well. Yeah, he says, we'll be ready. And that's it. That's the end of the episode.
Yep. This episode would be immensely better if as soon as the mayor's majordomo took off in a car, you just had a scene of him just driving hell-bent through the streets, looking at his rear view mirror. No one's there. Uh-huh. He gets to the spaceport like, ha-ha. I beat this guy, and then Boba just lands right next to him, pulls a gun, is like, I've got a jetpack, you dumbass. Uh-huh. Did you forget? Like, and then because, like, the other thing, I feel like Boba is holding the bag a lot in these episodes.
Sure.
Like, Boba is being befuddled and tricked and disrespected at all turns, and the exact same scene, you cut out all the bikers and you make Boba look like a badass. It's a win. Anyway, maybe only this is going to be like Star Trek rules. Only the even numbered episodes are going to be bangers. The odds are going to be oof, motion picture. Oof. Oh my God, these bikers. It's a fucking Search for Spock. Oh,
I am curious.
Save some whales next episode.
I am curious to see where he goes in the flashbacks at this point, like with all the Tusken camps being burnt to the ground, or not all of them, but his particular one.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's got to be some pretty grim vengeance because they sold Boba having a very intense bond with these people. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, to me, that this calls for very dark resolution.
Yes.
And I'm curious to see if they can do that in like a T-rated family show.
We'll see.
Because he told the story.
So
he
you
told
can,
the story.
He disintegrates.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, maybe he got the you don't torture after he brutalizes these people. Like, that's a lesson he learned. Like, oh, I went to a place and I felt my father disapproving from me from the grave, man. I just want to feel that again. Well, that's it for the episode. We'll come back with the mailbag. But first, a quick break.
Getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret, Hush Hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald maneuvers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. All right, we're back with the feedback. We got quite a few messages this week. If you'd like to send us feedback, it's easy. Just send an email to tribe@baldmove.com and we'll read it. First up is Caleb. Caleb says, regarding the feedback you received about how calm Boba Fett was about his father being killed, he's definitely hell-bent on revenge for a period of time. There's an episode in the Clone Wars, the episode called Death Trap, where Boba tries to kill Mace for killing his father. He's obviously not successful, but he does manage to blow up Mace's Jedi cruiser. It's kind of a fun plot where Boba pretends to be a clone cadet and has to deal with the clones of his father and also decide how far he's willing to go to get revenge. We also see the beginning of Boba rolling around with bounty hunters. I think he was more unhinged closer to the incident, but it's been decades and decades at this point. And like you said, Mace is dead, so I don't think Xanax or therapy would necessarily be required for him to have more control over his emotions. I mean, not just Mace, like the entire Jedi Order is wiped out. You've got, you know, at this point in the story, you've got
no, what? Nobody, right? Like, is maybe Luke's got a Jedi Academy, is trying to get back off the ground, but for most of Boba's life, there's been Yoda, Darth Vader, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Joris Seboth.
Sure.
Whatever fucking mad Rasputin monk that they drag out for Timothy Zahn's original trilogy.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's if you got a hate boner for Jedi, there's just not a lot of relief.
It's true.
It's, you better call a doctor, because that's going to be a 20-year-old hate boner that's going to go unbeaten. Caleb finishes with, one other detail is that in the next episode of The Clone Wars, when Mace and Boba finally meet, Boba tells him he'll never forgive him for killing his father, and Mace just says, you'll have to.
Nope.
Which I think showcases more of the Jedi's arrogance in the final days before their fall.
And Boba says, nuh-uh. Can't make me.
The Jedi are shitters, man, in the prequels. They really kind of deserved everything they got. Maybe not the younglings.
Yeah.
Well, all the masters. What the hell? You guys, what kind of order you're running? Aaron, double Aaron. I like the name. Says, hey guys, love your content. I'm happy to become a premium member recently. Well, good for you. I have, and thank you for your support. I have a theory about why the Tuskens have to wear the mouthpiece and head wraps.
Okay.
In the episode 2 podcast, you guys discussed Boba not getting the Tusken head wraps, and I think I know why. The chieftain tells Boba a story about when Tatooine was covered in water, so I think it's possible that Tuskens might be an aquatic species that need the mouthpiece and wraps to survive since their seas dried up.
Whoa.
Anyway, thanks for listening to me ramble, and keep up the good work. That's a pretty good theory.
Yeah. No, it makes sense with what we know.
Yeah, especially if the seas dried up very quickly, and maybe, within the last 100,000 years or so, like, it's just not enough time for the Tuskens to evolve
the
proper thing. So yeah, like, the fact that they have to keep wrapped up at all times or they die, that's interesting. I like that.
Are they pouring black melon juice on themselves constantly to keep those wraps nice and wet?
Maybe those wraps are just like really, really, they're like the Freeman still suits in Dune. They're just really good at recycling that water. They just pour the black melon juice through the mouth hole.
They're basically walking cacti, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. Barrel cactus. Store that water. Pat says, greeting from a galaxy not so far away. Andromeda?
Maybe.
You have likely seen numerous clickbaity articles related to the subject of the Black Wookiee in Chapter 2 of the Book of Boba Fett. Indeed, you surmise correctly. However, as a connoisseur of the broader Disney Star Wars canon, I wanted to take it upon myself to stroll in like Boba in the Bibb's throne room and fire some information at you in case you missed it. Much like Bo-Katan and Ahsoka in Mando last year, this Wookiee is making a leap from one form of media to the next. His name is Black Chrysantan, and he's been seen as a frequent player in Darth Vader comic book lines, as well as its spinoff series, Dr. Aphra? Jesus. How are you going to spin a Darth Vader off and call it Dr. Aphra? So I'm sure that one's flying off the shelves.
Yeah.
He runs in similar circles to Boba, so they do have a history, which certainly comes across in that scene, even without the context of any comics.
Does it? I missed it.
Potential. Well, I mean, I don't know. They kind of mean mugged each other. I think I see.
I just thought that was familiar. A hired gun who was there to kill the guy, mean mugging his prey, but.
Yeah, I think, but it's kind of like, I think Boba Fett works in Return of the Jedi, even if you didn't see him in Empire. But if you saw him in Empire, it gives you like, oh, you know that him and Han Solo have beef, you know?
Sure.
But I'm interested because, like, he gets freed by Boba Fett. He's a very cool looking dude, and it seems likely. We also talked about how deficient the muscle of Boba is right now. This would be like, this guy took on almost all of Boba's muscles and almost won.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's doubling the muscle just by switching sides here, and it feels like that's what's going to happen.
I mean, I'd be cool with that. I would love to see that, actually. I think he's one of the cooler characters in this show so far.
Yeah. Maybe you can pull the arms off the biker kids. Don't think they'd mind. It just, they get replacements, and then they can come back grittier and cooler looking.
For sure.
all of them having replacement arms with quick detachable couplings, because this is going to happen again and again and again.
Yeah.
You know,
like, you just sit them down for a game of Holo Chess and it'll work itself out.
You got to design these guys' arms like the gas tank, the gas hoses at convenience stores, man. They're designed to pop off because, you know, people are going to leave. Yeah. You don't want to wreck your whole pump. So just, yeah, make the easy detach Wookiee arms so you don't have to continually fix your prosthetics. It's the only way to do it. Leobo says, midway in seeing the Rancor, my first thoughts were felt like expected and then boring. And then Trejo picked my attention up and I thought, wow, they're gifting us the visual of Fett riding a Rancor to mow down his enemies in the finale episode. It was the equal bliss of experienced RoboCop riding unicorns. And he says, parenthetically, you got to Google it. It's a thing. All right. Then just a few minutes later, they brought out the hipsters and it couldn't get worse. They put them on space Vespas. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? These worlds should not collide. Please get current culture out of my space fantasy. Favreau has been doing amazing work with this tired material again and again, so I have faith. But for how long? Here's where I'm getting at. If they are setting us up for what could be an amazing moment of cinema with a man riding a Rancor, or will it be Danny, the mother of dragons, riding Falcor type fail? Star Wars spent its middle years being shit story, great special effects, and bad spatial choreography. Now the writing and story are good again, and the practical CGI effects have found balance. Will we get a gift or open it to find a flaming bag of shit?
We
got half our feedback was about these biker gangs. In fact, Jessica piles on, says the most obvious offenders in the show, the most obvious offender of the bikers is their styling. They seem far too clean and polished like for a desert street gang. Their clothing screamed 80s to me. Their styling was so out of place in any Star Wars world that it was immediately ruined. And don't even get me started on the bright, shiny, clearly never seen dirt in a desert land scooters and bold, vibrant, shall I say, Power Rangers colors. Yes, you shall. Mm-hmm. I get a real sense that someone had just watched the Warriors on the design team.
Yeah.
Another offense was the integration of the droid tech. Nothing felt accurate. Each piece felt too closely derived from our current tech today versus something that would have actually been pulled out of a droid. I agree. Like, that lady needed a C-3PO looking arm with hydraulics and shit exposed. She's got something that looks like she stole it from the movie AI.
The droids are not super advanced in their form. You know, there are a lot of different forms, but all of them are pretty crude.
Yeah, they're all about function in the Star Wars universe, not hiding, you know, machinery and circuits and wiring and stuff like that. Like, yeah,
I'm with you. And I'm worried for the Rancor scene because of a scene like this. Right. Like, if they're going to half ass Boba riding a Rancor, I don't even want to see it. If he's going 4 miles an hour and Fennec's like, come on, man, I got shit to do. Let's get this Rancor up to speed. I'm not going to be impressed by it.
Especially since, like, I'm pretty sure in one of the Jedi Knights, you got to ride a Rancor. And it was kind of fucking awesome. Oh, so, like, if you can't do better than 10-year-old computer graphics, just stay at home. Just stay at home.
10, he says. 10 years
probably,
old, that
probably
Jedi
15,
Knight.
Oh, probably longer.
Oh, yeah.
20? Oh, Jesus. How fucking old am I, Jim?
Pretty old,
Let's
man.
Let's not think about it. I want to go back to Leobo's email because they have the kind of same concern. I said, a note at the end scene with Trejo made it look like it could be either a lame trick where the Rancor is meant to eat Fett or that the pet is just being soothed by Trejo because his newly imprinted master left him. Could read either way. I think it's the latter. I don't think Trejo is tricking Fett. I don't think like the first thing he sees, he's going to have to compulsively eat.
Well, when it was laying there on the Hutt's delivery platform, I was thinking, is this a Trojan Rancor? Is like, are four other dark Wookiees going to pop out of this thing in the middle of the night?
Yeah, like Frank Reynolds from that couch.
Exactly. Yeah. Squeeze through whatever orify they can find on this Rancor. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to learn something cool about the Maori culture here. Joe wrote in after we talked about Morrison's facial expressions.
Oh boy.
So you're talking last week about this guy's facial expressions when he's in combat. I thought as a New Zealander, I could give some context. I'm not Maori, but I have been exposed to enough of the culture that there's a few things I feel comfortable saying with some confidence. expressions Morrison wears in Battle are 100% him bringing his Maori-ness to the performance. You can see expressions like these in any haka. A haka is defined by on the Maori dictionary as a posture dance with vigorous dances, actions, and rhythmically shouted words. You have to really see one to get the idea. And if you've ever seen like the New Zealand rugby team take the field in the Olympics, there's been several. Like you could probably Google New Zealand team haka and see a bunch of these examples of this very intimidating war dance, essentially, you know. During the haka, you can see some of the performers pulling extreme facial expressions, which often involve exposing the whites of the eye and the teeth and the tongue. These are known as pukana. This short video goes into some depth, and he sent me a 3-minute video of a Maori gentleman explaining like the significance. Like, so there's two purposes for these. I did a bunch of research and I fell down a pukana hole yesterday. Number one, originally these were things you did to people in battle to like just intimidate the shit out of them. Like, look at me, look how big and scary, look at the whites of my eyes and how insane I look. And also, I'm going to eat you. We're going to kill and eat you. That's the story. But then also this became like incorporated in a lot of the rituals or funerary rites. And there's like 36 different distinct types of these like grotesque facial distortions that they do. And they all mean something different, like the angle of the tongue and the eyes and the cast of the face. And also, like, if you want to, there's some really cool stuff. I went down this hashtag pukana hole on TikTok of all these Maori people doing like pukana offs and like haka versions of like pop songs and stuff. And it was real. I spent like at least an hour. That's what I did waiting for the Expanse to start up last night. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, it's effective, man. I think like it brings something fierce to the fight that I don't see in other fights.
And it makes a lot of sense. I do think, you know, now that I've seen like dozens of different New Zealanders and Maori doing their hakas and their pukanas, I do think that Tamura does bring a set of chompers. Tamura brings a set of chompers that are impressive. You know, like Jim said, the walls have never been breached. Like I do, like I think he's got exceptional equipment to bear in battle.
Sure,
But yeah, I appreciate it, and I'm glad I got to learn something new. So thanks for that, Joe. Next, we got Sean Bon Jovi says, just a quick note. We saw the origin of Finnick and Boba's relationship in Mando. Finnick was gutted and left for dead. Boba picked her up and fixed her up with some cybernetic guts. I'm definitely hoping we don't find another hidden link between the two of them. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, right? And the now we've seen this episode, the whole tribe's been wiped out. So I think all this stuff is moot.
Yeah,
it's a good theory.
I think so.
It's a good theory. I don't necessarily mean it was impossible, but it clearly is now. So thanks for pointing that out, Sean Bon. And we'll move on to Nicholas. Says, I love your guys' commentary on so many great shows. I've been enjoying listening to your Book of Boba. And one issue I've noticed is something my friends and I've also been struggling with. How should we refer to the indigenous peoples of Tatooine? Should we refer to as Sand People, Tusken Raiders, or Tuskens? At first, Sand People sounds like a pejorative or even a derogatory term, likely because of their depiction in A New Hope and other canon. However, if Wikipedia is to be believed, the term Sand People was given to them due to their existence in the desert. But the more formal name of Tusken Raiders was acquired much later due to a period of concentrated attacks on a settlement at Fort Tusken. Though this name is often used as a common term for the race, it actually refers only to the participants of the attack on the settlement. According to the same entry, the term Sand People dates back to 4,000 years before the Battle of Yavin, 4,000 years before Star Wars A New Hope. But Tusken Raiders dates back to about 98 or 95 years before the Battle of Yavin when the attacks took place. Although Tusken appears to be the more accepted term, even referring to their language, it actually seems to be more of a pejorative term given its origins. Dropping Raider doesn't change the meaning as a term. Tusken has no etymology independent of the raids on the fort, to my understanding. Alternatively, especially considering the portrayal of this group in the Book of Boba, Sand People need not be pejorative at all and seems fairly descriptive. They are the people of the sand. Because of how important a role they play in the show, it's worth considering which term is actually best. Yeah, I mean, like, so like, yeah. Again, what I said last week about how this is all fictional stuff and it doesn't really matter. I also think it's kind of useful to talk about this stuff in a frame that maybe doesn't offend anyone real, because you can kind of like test out your theories on this. What do you think, Jim?
I think this is pretty convincing. However, I would also say Sand People seems like a relatively new name. If we're talking about a people who were probably around when Tatooine was a water planet.
True.
They would certainly not have called them the Sand People then. And Sand People, even in the history that you've laid out here, is also a name given to them by others. So that's where it comes back to. Like, what do the Sand People call themselves? That's what I want to know. Can we get, like, a word in their language that means, like, that is their name?
Yeah.
Well, would we be able to speak it? I don't know.
What I think is interesting is, like, how many words that refer to a people that they call themselves in their own language are just, like, man, woman, human,
sure,
people.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, like, you know, oh, those people, they're not, they're Maori. Well, what's Maori mean? Well, it means the people on the land.
You know, it's kind of like calling.
What do we call ourselves? You know, and I think that's interesting, because, like, if everyone, like, whenever you made first contact and they're like, what are these people? Uh-huh. They say they're just humans. Oh, they're humans? Well, we're humans. All right. Like things would be a lot different, you know?
Sure.
Like, they're not fucking humans. They're, you know, sand people or Tuscans or what. It's, yeah.
Well, I think of, like, the Expanse in terms of, like, the Belters and what they call themselves, right? They have a word in their language, which it crucially is pronounceable with the human tongue. I don't know how pronounceable a sand person name in their native language would be for a human, but, you know, you can call them Belters, you can call them a lot of things, but they call themselves Beltalota as a people, right?
I feel like
that's, like, the proper name for the Belters. And Belters is, like, a shortening of that.
Yeah.
Shortening of it.
Belta Loda means literally
people of the
all
belt.
Of us Belters.
Yeah. We like, Belters,
Loda is,
essentially.
Yeah, you could say, like, there's a pallet Loda. You got a bunch of pallets, you know? So I just looked it up, because I just guessed at this. The actual meaning of Maori, as far as I can mean, means... normal or ordinary. So, like, the Maori call themselves, we're just the normal people.
Yeah.
We're just regular people. That's it.
Makes
regular
sense.
Regular people.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, fuck, what if I got that wrong? The other thing is, the other thing that's unique to the fact that this is a fake culture on a fake planet and all this is made up is that Wikipedia entry could be based on Star Wars legends that are not fact.
Oh, shit.
Like, until this is established in, like, a canon source, I honestly don't know what is and isn't canon. I think the Clone Wars is, like, one of those things that are still canon. I know definitely from Rebels on, it becomes canon. But, it seems like Favreau is trying to put it to where, like, you know, like, there is no Fort Tusken. Tusken is what they call themselves, and Raiders is a pejorative, and Sand People is, like, a bit of a pejorative too. But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. That's the way it's being used in this show.
Yeah. And it's also, I think it's, like, the way Sand People hits me wrong, because I was, like, you know, I was a kid growing up during the first Gulf War,
yeah,
and I
exactly.
heard a lot of my Muslim friends in junior high, attacked by sand and a pejorative, and, like, that's, like, the first time I've ever heard a slur in, like, uttered in anger, and it made a big impact. So, like, when I hear, like, say, like, it just seems like a, you know, like, they're sand people.
Yeah, there's an implication of being less civilized, less valuable because of where they live. It's
there's, like, lots of different ways to demean a culture by, you know, just dismissing them with, like, a common thing they're associated with. But on the other hand, if literally in their tongue they call themselves the people of the sand, which is plausible, then you should probably, refer to them that, or maybe in their. But I don't know what it sounds like. If I spoke their language, it sounded like a donkey braying. So I don't know if I could pull that off. But Star Wars politically correct speech. It's an interesting thing to play with. That's all we got for this week. If you would like to send us some more feedback on this, show me your favorite Pukana face. I would like to see it. tribe@baldmove.com. We'll be back next week to see if Book of Boba can. And my fondest wish is he's in his back to tank. And there's a flashback to where he pulls up to the biker gang and they're all just in a crater, smoking crater. And it's just another thing that he's pissed off about. And we never see these people again because the Wookiee, the Gamorrean, okay. Danny Trejo, Finnick, and the Rancor can stay.
Mm-hmm.
Kids need to get the fuck out. 8B8, you're cool too. Still waiting for Matt Berry to be funny. These Power Rangers need to go. We'll see if it happens next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.